can't hear it. Good morning, friends. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. Happy to be here. Ably assisted by Kate Brister on the engineering end of the spectrum here at Coast Community Radio. Thanks, Kate, for your help. We are happy to have with us today a couple of representatives from Pacific Power, Pacific Corp, whatever it is, and we're going to be talking about various power company issues, and I'm happy to have Pat Wrighton here and Sheila Holden. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks, Jim. We're just absolutely delighted to be here.
I usually like to start out, Pat, with a kind of a biographical sketch. So let's start out with Pat, a little biographical. Then after he's done, Sheila will switch to you.
Sure. Well, I am, I am a native Oregonian. Grew up on the west side of Portland. I've been coming down to the North Coast my entire life, and eventually went away to college at the University of Washington, which makes it a very lonely time during football season for me working in Portland. And had a great experience early on. My early career, I went to Washington, D.C., and I worked for U.S. Senator Mark Hatfield and did energy policy, and that led to a career in the energy industry, which I love. So we're pleased to be down here this weekend. My wife Randy and our kids, and one of the great honors I've been able to experience is serving as your admiral for the regatta this weekend.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. So you'll be in the parade, I assume.
I will be. I will be. Absolutely. So Sheila, we're praying for no rain.
I don't see any rain in the horizon until perhaps October.
Excellent.
We're going to count on that, Jim. Okay. I'm Sheila Holden, Regional Business Manager for Pacific Power. I've been working for the company almost ever since I got out of college, and I've been visiting the coast here. I started, first of all, visiting the coast because my husband played a lot of softball and participated a lot in the softball tournaments that they would have during regatta week over the years, back in the day, so to speak. But as a Pacific Power Regional Business Manager, I've been responsible for the coast area now for about 14 years. And it's I always call it God's country. And I love coming to the coast, and the people and the businesses here are wonderful to work with.
Well, Pat, I know that Pacific Power started here in Astoria. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the history of the company.
Absolutely. This quite literally and figuratively is home base for us as a company. Pacific Power started in 1910, and it had a really interesting beginning. A man by the name of Sidney Z. Mitchell, who lived and worked in Portland and was the Northwest representative for General Electric, came to Astoria to repossess some electrical equipment associated with the trolley line, and got here, realized that the trolley line was powered by a local generating plant, and really realized that there was really something there. And so he cobbled together Pacific Power, which went into business in June of 1910, by collecting four small city systems: Yakima, Pendleton, Walla Walla,
Astoria.
So those four were the nucleus of the original Pacific Power, and it all started right here.
And today, Pacific Power encompasses what?
Well, as Pacific Power serves about 750,000 customers in Oregon, Washington, Northern California. Its sister company, as a result of a merger back at the end of the 80s, Rocky Mountain Power served Idaho,
right,
Wyoming, and Utah. So as a whole, as Pacific Corp, we serve 1.8 million customers across six western states. So what started here has become a relatively large enterprise.
Right. And I'm curious about the sources that you use. I mean, you get power and you sell power.
Absolutely.
That's your job. And I know hydropower is a big factor, but what others describe to me the sources of your power?
Well, sure, and you know we generate and or purchase power in order to serve our customers' needs, and that's from a very diverse set of generating resources. Not only do we have hydropower, but we have geothermal, we have coal, we have natural gas, we have. Amongst regulated utilities, we have the second most wind of any utility in the country. We were, as of late, starting to add solar into our generating mix. So it's a very diverse portfolio, and in some ways you kind of think of that almost like an investment portfolio. You want it to be diverse and flexible.
What, just off the top of your head, what percentage of your of your product comes from renewable sources?
That's all in the definition, but in terms of zero emitting, carbon emitting resources, that's about 25% today.
Well, I'm talking about renewable. I mean, clearly when you burn oil, you're not going to get any more oil. You've burned it up. But solar, for example, is renewable. So it's, you know, about 25%, you're saying.
Yeah. So if you look at wind generation and solar generation, we, by the way, own the first utility scale solar project in the state down in Lakeview. You add wind and you add solar to our hydroelectric system, dams on the Lewis and the Klamath and the Umpqua rivers, and you know it creates a pretty good, you know, clean renewable base to our generating portfolio.
And over time, do you see that trending upward? A greater percentage of renewables providing your product?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you know, as we're projecting forward and looking at our incremental need, we actually will get 86%. Meet 86% of that incremental need through the cleanest and least cost of all, which is energy efficiency. In some respects, the plant we don't build is the best plant of all. So we look at our what we call our thermal generating plants, and particularly our coal fleet, and you know, between now and 2029, we will shut down 10 of those by 2034, about half our fleet will be gone. We'll be replacing that with lower emissions and hopefully substantially renewable generating resources.
You know, something that I don't know a lot about, but that's interesting to me, is the geothermal. Mm-hmm. I know that's a small percentage of your product, but could you describe how that works and how you can increase that percentage?
Sure. It's you know, in concept, very, very simple. You send water to down wells where you have subsurface hot rock, and it turns it to steam, and you pipe that steam out and generate with it. And there are some great spots in Oregon where we see real potential. There's a new plant coming online out in southeast Oregon in Paisley. A lot of potential in central Oregon around and adjacent to the Newperry volcanic crater there. That was, by the way, for me, one of the interesting things I got to work on for Senator Hatfield was actually creating a national monument there in Newberry. So very familiar personally with that area and the geothermal resources. And those are great from a generation standpoint. Because they're what we call baseload. They're not variable. It generates all day, all night. The flip side is that the plants are relatively small and they're highly locational. You've got to go where the conditions are right.
So it's relatively expensive then, could I assume?
It all depends on the site. Another great area in the state is Klamath Basin. And they've been for years heating city sidewalks with geothermal, and now Oregon Tech has established new geothermal generating sites to power the campus. We've been involved and helped facilitate that. So you're right, at the end of the day, the dollars and cents matter, and it just really gets down to whether the heat is hot enough and whether it's adjacent to transmission line so we can get it to serve load.
Sheila, I wonder whether you could give me your perspective on renewables as part of the future of Pacific Corp.
Well, to look back for just a moment, Pacific Power has always been an innovator when it comes to being a steward of the environment and looking for the least cost and most efficient way to serve our customers. We came up with the idea of demand-side resources and the concept that Pat was talking about earlier around energy efficiency as part of a utilities portfolio to reduce the amount of new generation they have to bring online. Another piece of innovation for us was the idea that we want to do things that are going to actually push forward the envelope, if you will, on local applications for renewable energy sources. And so we have our Blue Sky program. And the Blue Sky program is basically made up of customers who've bought into the idea that they too want to be a part of finding the solution to renewable energy as energy sources. And they buy parts into Blue Sky. Those dollars then go to actually fund projects, local projects for communities where there may be with the businesses or with cities or individual organizations that have a project that they want to do. Typically, they can be related to the habitat or they can be related to actual wind generation or hydro generation. And we just funded one of those projects here in the city of Astoria back in the spring. We have a turbine that's in the Bear Creek Reservoir that the city of Astoria christened, I think it was back in April, or March, I should say. And it's generating enough power that it offsets the amount of usage for their water system. They also generate enough power, if they were to use it as such, to actually power 16 homes for a year. So that's an exciting way that we actually think about what we're doing globally and have opportunity for our customers to help us act on it locally.
Yeah, that Blue Sky program has been a top five in the nation green power marketing program for, I think, 11 years running. And the idea that customers would choose voluntarily to offset their own use or pay $1.95, 100 kilowatt hour block, and that those dollars go right back into the community to support projects.
Yeah, I know that we at our house we've joined that program when it started, been paying ever since.
Yeah, beautiful. Me too.
Yeah, we celebrated our 15th year this year, and at the celebration when we christened the turbine up at Bear Creek, we were also able to recognize one of our own local residents who has been a customer for all 15 years, and we've reached our 100,000th customer who's participating in the Blue Sky program this year too.
Cool. I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm Jim Wilkins, your host, and I'm visiting with Pat Wrighton and Sheila Holden from Pacific Power, Pacific Corp. And we're talking about power. Now, Pat, I don't know if you probably have read the article a couple of weeks ago in the New Yorker about the subduction zone earthquake that's going to happen here. And kind of a scary article, and it's got a lot of people talking about what steps they could take to work through that disaster when it happens. And I'm wondering, from a corporate perspective, what... how does Pacific Power anticipate dealing with that kind of an incredible crisis?
Well, yeah, so I have not read the article, but certainly as not only from a company perspective, but as a part-time resident of the coast, very, very well aware of the potential. And, you know, it was, you know, a few years ago during the Japanese tsunami, we had a little bit of a dress rehearsal as a company. I can remember I was doing customer and community visits in the Albany area, and my cell phone went off at 4:30 in the morning, and it was our vice president of operations informing me of the Japanese tsunami. And by 6:30, our local team here, which, by the way, is a fabulous team. Steve McGordy, who runs our service center, is top flight. They had our trucks fueled and positioned on the high ground. We had reviewed our system and turned power off to circuits in low-lying tsunami-exposed areas.
Right.
Crescent City was a good example of an area that actually did get hit by that event. So we do have plans, and we are constantly engaged in preparation and drills. We're also spending time with the state, contributing to their tsunami protection and planning efforts. So, you know, that's what we do as a company. We are trying to prepare for bad things that may happen all the time.
Yeah, and it's a two-stage event when it happens, and as we know from stratigraphy, it will happen probably within the next 50 to 100 years. And the first thing that happens is the big earthquake that shakes everything, breaks everything, and then comes the tsunami. But you had kind of almost a dress rehearsal in, what was it, 2007?
Yes.
With the great gale that hit us. I know in Astoria, as I mentioned before, they went on the air. We were out of power for 8 days, and Pat was considerate enough to correct me. It just seemed like 8, but it was only 5.
It was 5, yes.
But you guys were really challenged during that event. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. If you talk about that event in Portland, they do call it the Great Oregon Gale. Here, though, they call it the hurricane, and
yeah.
it was. You know, about a third of the roofs in town here were damaged. I was, overseeing our emergency action center in Portland, and then manned the family Suburban to get here over Highway 30 on Wednesday after the winds had stopped on Tuesday. And it was, for a utility executive, it's a humbling thing to go from darkened City Hall to darkened City Hall and talk to people over candlelight, not where you want to be as an electric company. On the other hand, enormously proud of, our team the job they did to put the restoration efforts into place. It was all hands on deck. And, one of the advantages of today's Pacific Power serving 243 communities across 3 states is that you get to draw on crew resources from across that neighborhood to where they're needed. And where they were needed those days was right here. I had the CEO of our holding company with me in our family Suburban, and we had canceled our company Christmas party and taken all the leftover food and particularly all the desserts with us so that we could pass that out to those out to crews. And I think we went a day and a half eating nothing other than sugar cookies, so it was a bit of a challenge there too, but tremendously challenging events. I mean, some of the memories for me, going and talking to Mark Winstanley, who was the city manager in Seaside at the mm-hmm. time, and I don't know if Mark still lives in Surf Pines. I'm guessing he may, but he directed us there, and we pulled in, and, our crews were all along down the line, but the old joke that they were going to have to rename it Surf Pineless, and it was full of trees snapped off at about 4 or 5.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
Yeah, really, really dramatic stuff. So that is what you prepare for as a company. That is why you make system hardening investments. That's why you have emergency protocols. And knock on wood, hopefully we don't have another one of those anytime soon. But couldn't be more proud of our team's efforts there.
And Jim, related to that, We had the preparation that we started that Thursday and Friday before. And I want to give kudos to the emergency management folk here in Clatsop County, both at the county and in each of the cities. We were able to get contact information in case things did go wrong, where we'd know we'd be able to have immediate access to the people who would be needing to make decisions and deploy resources, or we might be able to help, or that might be able to help us. And that was critical. I want to thank all of the communities and the emergency management folks who worked with us, and we were all in it together, and I think that's why it worked so well. And for the media too, you guys just kind of opened your doors, and as it was needed for folks to come in and give information to the public, you were here to make that happen. So
it was
a team effort by the whole community.
We were the only station that functioned through that 5-day span, and we're proud to have served the community.
We were here and listening. I can tell you that for sure.
You know, one thing that brings up, at least in my mind, having spent 33 years as an underground utility contractor, I'm curious why Pacific Power doesn't spend more effort undergrounding some of these facilities that would avoid wind damage and that sort of thing.
Yeah, really two answers there. One is expense. So it is, you know, exponentially more expensive to underground rather than put it overhead.
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue most people don't think of is speed of restoration. Underground cables do fail. When they fail, it's harder to find the fault. It takes more time. Oftentimes you have to pull cable through the conduit in order to find that fault, whereas, you know, if it's a overhead line, you can identify it visually almost immediately. So, it is a balance, and but it's, you know, that there are, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, it's really nice. I mean, there's some great areas on the North Coast. I think about some of the developments that have happened in Cannon Beach, where the developers have paid to have it underground.
Yeah, Chapman Point.
Yep. Yeah.
We built that actually.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, great. There was a in Gearhart, where we've had a family house for 35 plus years, and we have relatives with deep backgrounds there. A group of residents on South Marion Street went together, formed a local improvement district, and funded undergrounding there. And you know, from the standpoint of being able to look out and see Cascade Head unimpeded, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So that was a local improvement district. You see any more of those forming and doing that kind of thing?
Sure. That happens, I think, all the time. But you know, like anything, everybody has to be in. And not only in terms of, funding the work down the street, but also as the lines come into the house, you have to reset meters, and so there's some expense there. But our crews who do that work have done a very nice job. Those projects look great, and so we'll likely see more of those over time.
Well, I know that you're here actually not because of the power company, but because of the regatta.
Yes.
Or, in fact, we had this discussion last week, is it regatta or regatta?
Yeah.
And the thing that I discovered, Pat, is that the local people tend to pronounce it regatta.
Mm-hmm.
And people from elsewhere tend to call it the regatta. How do you pronounce it?
Well, I have to admit, Jim, I'm just absolutely humbled and honored to be this year's admiral. And, you know, that is a confluence of events for me that meshes my personal history, you know, coming here and having a family house and relatives, you know, my entire life, having, you know, played in the Astoria tournament as a high school basketball player for Sunset High School, and all these great things meshing with the long history of the company, and being able to participate in that way is great. But I too have noticed the different pronunciations, and so, you know, I did what I'm prone to do. I asked, and my understanding is there is no wrong answer, which is great. So whether it's the regatta or the regatta, and whether you're coming to the event from the peninsula or Astoria or Warrenton or Seaside or Cannon Beach, I mean it is the premier event on the North Coast, and the fact that it is 16 years older than our company's 105-year history here is pretty impressive.
Now, Sheila, I know that you've been friends with Willis Van Dusen for many years. And,
for sure.
And this weekend is the celebration of Willis.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could reflect a little bit on your friendship and your history with Willis Van Dusen, who has been, of course, the mayor here for many years.
You know, Willis Van Dusen is one of those individuals who I think is perennial. He is one of those folks who will always be at the top of his game, committed to his community, and so resourceful in ways that are making connections with people, making connections with resources, making connections with innovative ideas that have helped to change and enhance the future of his great city of Astoria. And he's totally dedicated to it. And I have really appreciated his ability to see the big picture and work with our company over the years. When we had that 2007 storm, and I mentioned thank you to your station, I know that Willis and Paul were, we would have conversations and he'd come right on air and shared with folks and help keep people in the know so they knew what was going on and they didn't feel isolated during the course of that 5 days. So I think our friendship kind of gelled during that time, going through a crisis together. The beauty of Willis is that you guys do not lose him. He is still here. He's running his business, which is the oldest family-owned business in Oregon, 1849, I think it is. And I think he had a coffee that even is named after that. And he also is going to be...
Yeah.
So I'm going to let Pat share this piece of information.
Well, we're really pleased and proud, and Willis has joined our regional advisory board. So Willis, I have in the car with me for this weekend a set of business cards with the Pacific Power logo on it and Willis's name, which is wonderful. So he'll be providing advice and counsel for us, and that's a reflection of the strong working relationship. You talk about the 07 storm, and we got to watch Willis at his finest in the city and county's emergency action center, helping to coordinate he and Paul all of the activities here. But you know, underlying it all, you know, he and Jan are just first-class people, they are friends as well as colleagues, which is nice. I do have, you talked about regatta. We need to figure out what to call Willis now because the title Mayor for Life no longer works. So we'll have to work on that.
That's true.
Well, actually, John Kitzhaber used to call him Mayor for Life.
yes.
But, Sheila, I know there's some kind of a celebration of Willis tomorrow. Do you know anything about that? I don't.
Well, I'm not sure of all the details, so I can't share that with you.
Well, there
come to the event and see.
Yeah, there is an event at 3 o'clock tomorrow.
Yes,
and Willis will be celebrated in terms of his community leadership, and that's as it should be.
And that would be at Heritage Square.
Heritage Square, we call it Regatta Square.
Right next to the Garden of Surging Waves.
Yes.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real
Thanks
pleasure
to Willis,
chatting
that's
with
there too.
Yes, and thank you, Willis, for all the years of community service. Willis and I have been friends since 40-some years. Willis, unfortunately, was an Oregon duck. And I myself am a California bear. Ah. So we had this kind of constant conflict that we managed to deal with over the years. But it's been great talking to both Sheila and Pat here from Pacific Corp. And I'd urge our listeners to stick around for Albert Smith's always wonderful Friday Folk Show. And with that, I'd like to say goodbye and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.